How come the invention of the microphone is how love songs came to be? Well, let's talk about it. Welcome to Design Dive, the podcast that explores design that's all around us every Wednesday in just 10 to 15 minutes, so you can get on with your day. My name's Chris Downs, and whether you're a designer or just simply curious about how design impacts our everyday life, you're in the right place. So, let's dive in. Today's episode is going to be about the microphone. Now, we all know what a microphone is, and really, they're everywhere. In your phone, in your computer, the microphone I'm using right now to record this podcast, they're really just a normal part of life. But they didn't always used to be like that. For this episode, my focus is going to be on music and how it was impacted by the microphone. Now, we're going to rewind all the way back to the late 1800s. At this time, microphones weren't a thing. There were music engineers trying to find a way to capture sound. And to provide context, at the time, musical performances sometimes were problematic. Oftentimes, theaters were too large and limited in how music could be presented to bigger audiences. So, really, the most successful artists were the ones that could belt out the music the loudest. That's why when you listen to earlier songs, some of the first recorded, performers are very loud and very vocal, because when singing in theaters, they didn't have microphones to project their voices. They just naturally had to sing at top volume. A singing band leader named Rudy Valli came up with one solution. His idea was to use a megaphone to help amplify his voice over the sound of his band. And that really was kind of the first adaptation of some sort of microphone to project a voice. Now, later on, even when microphones started coming into use, Valli was so identified with that megaphone that he actually kept using it as a signature prop during his performances. But we get to the early 1900s, and we have music engineers trying to find ways to capture sound and figure out how to amplify it. So in the 1910s, an acoustical recording process was being come up with. Musicians or singers would crowd around an old recording cone, and they would play into this cone. Now, at the end of it was what was called a cutting needle. So just to explain, there was a cylinder that would rotate, and as sound was entering the cone, this needle would cut a groove into this cylinder that would match that sound, so that when played back, and this needle would go back over these grooves, it would recreate the sound that was put into that cone. Now, this works very similarly to the record player that we would know today, vinyl. Same principle, this is the first iteration of it. And so, really, when they wanted to capture sound, they really had to be tricky with it. They had this cone in the studio, and whenever there was a performer or an instrument that needed to be featured, other performers would step out of the way so that that performer could be close enough to the cone so that that needle could capture that sound and record it accurately. Now, this was kind of awkward and obviously would probably be very entertaining just to watch that by itself. But performers also learned how to manipulate sounds themselves. So louder and higher notes, they step back a bit to avoid the sound to be distorted. And softer sound, they needed to move forward and closer to the cone so that it could be picked up by the recording. So they got really good at figuring out how to record this. So we see here that this first iteration of the microphone, the design of this, was very elementary compared to the microphones that we have today, but it was a start. A really big step forward in the microphone came with the development of the carbon button microphone. An inventor in England, David Edward Hughes, was the first to create what became known as this carbon button microphone. I'll explain in a moment what that means. But over in America, Emil Berliner, a German-born inventor, worked in Thomas Edison's laboratories and was among the first to actually come up with the first usable carbon button microphone in America. Now, Edison initially, he wasn't interested in what Berliner's had invented. And so Berliner later sold the rights of his invention to Alexander Graham Bell. That name sounds familiar. He is known as the inventor of the telephone. There's a lot of story behind this transferring of this invention, because later Edison would eventually weigh in on what needed to be done with the microphone, and Berliner had arguments back and forth over the patent and whose name was supposed to be on there. But let's go back to talking about what the carbon button microphone is. Essentially, it's this drum-like device that is suspended by a thin layer of loose carbon. And so once attached to some sort of suspension system, a sound wave would strike this drum, and that wave would then output through the device, the sound being put in through electricity. In the early 1920s, a few radio stations began to operate using this microphone and actually first broadcast a commercial via radio at the time. This was also exciting for entertainment, because music that normally was heard in auditoriums and theaters would now be able to be heard over sound waves. The first implementation of the use of the microphone in music actually wasn't in radio. People were trying to find ways to capture sound and project it inside theaters and auditoriums so that performers could better be heard. Now, eventually, yes, it would translate to the radio, but then this led to some changes in music. Now, they discovered that because of the microphone, instead of what we had before where musicians would belt out the music so that they could be heard, instead, they actually would need to sing quieter because the microphone could hear so much more and project that sound that if you yelled in the microphone, it wouldn't be very pleasant for performers. So these musicians that belted out their music actually struggled and sounded terrible in front of a microphone just because their voice was not tuned to that kind of a performance. So eventually, musicians would experiment and learn what was possible with the microphone. And they learned that emotions could be better conveyed with different fluctuations in tone and sound, and there's more that could be done to better entertain the listener. A new genre would then rise up known as crooning, which basically was today's modern love song. It came to be because they could have that fluctuation. They could whisper and they could be loud and fluctuate. And so eventually that emotion translated to. So what happened with this new genre? Well, it blew up. There was a lot of talk about it and really lots of controversies about how these crooners were going to be destroying the upcoming generation. And anyway, they were saying that these songs were teaching bad morals and were corrupting young people. And so they really condemned this style of music, and there was a lot of opposition from it. Some of the earlier artists like Al Boley and Gene Austin are some that you might recognize today, but later on, who become extremely popular would be artists like Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra, those kind of artists. Now, they're very much popular today and influenced music in such a different way. Eventually in the 1950s, we start to see some rock and roll coming out and mixing of styles there, such as Bob Dylan, Elvis Presley, Nora Jones. Those people really did shape what could be done with the microphone and how music would be recorded. Now today, we don't call it crooning. Today, we just call it love songs. That's really what it is today. But the next time you hear your favorite love song on the radio while listening to Spotify, just remember that love songs really came to be because of the microphone, because of that design, and trying to figure out the best way to capture sound really influenced where music could have gone. Just like designs of today, better improving products and experiences helps create building blocks that build off of one another and help us move forward to greater innovation and even better experiences in the future. And that's our dive. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow the channel, leave a rating or review, and follow this podcast on social media for updates on new episodes every week. But until next time, keep learning, stay inspired, and remember, design is all around us. See ya.